Hi, I'm Hudson Phillips, and you're listening to the Scriptblast Screenwriting Podcast. My goal is to help you write better screenplays and write a better life. The theme for season one is productivity, clarifying what you want, how you want to get it, and how to keep it going. Today, I'm talking with screenwriter Jessica Coleman all about surviving the mental slog. That's the roller coaster of pain and suffering that comes in the form of rejection, distraction, excuses, and low self-esteem that competes every day with getting the work done. If you haven't gone through the mental slog yet, I promise it is coming for you. And Jessica and I talk about how to head it off beforehand so that you can not only survive, but thrive through this difficult period of the writing life. Jessica has worked in production and marketing, working on films such as Passion of the Christ, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, Polar Express, and United 93, among many others. She has been a scriptreader for the Austin Film Festival and is a screenwriter herself, along with her writing partner, Alexis Pillow, for 10 years now. I learned a lot from Jessica over this conversation, so we'll jump right into it. Jessica Coleman, thanks for being on the show.
Awesome to be here. Thanks for having me.
So tell us a little bit about your writing journey so far, how you first got started, how you found your writing partner, and what that whole process has been like.
Okay, yeah. So I think I always liked to write, but I didn't really think I was necessarily skilled at it. I could see things in my head, didn't know how to translate it to paper. And I think I started learning how to do that in college. I had to take a screenwriting class as part of my film degree and really started to learn how to do that a little bit better, how to translate it into the format of screenwriting. And then jumped out into the workforce and was working in production for film. And
so when you studied film at school, what were you hoping to do at that point?
At that point, I was thinking I would go into directing. That was really where my heart was set. But at the same time, I wasn't sure that I could, that was the best fit for me. So I tried a lot of different things.
And so you were saying you took some screenwriting classes in school and then we're kind of working on the production side of things then.
Yeah, I was working in commercial production in Atlanta and then made the move to Los Angeles and jumped into marketing for film. Did that for several years. And it was during that season in LA that I really decided to kind of jump back in for real on the writing. It had been a little bit of a hobby just for fun with one of my coworkers at the production company that I had started out with. And once I moved to LA, we really kind of lost track of it for a while. We were just busy leading very different lives. And so we picked it up remotely from, you know, across the country and just started working on something together. And that's...
And this is who you write with now, Alexis?
Yes, it is. Yeah, Alexis Pillow. Okay.
And how long have you guys been writing together?
Gosh, I don't even want to say. I'll tell you how old I am. Like,
yeah, any number you name, I bet I have it beat.
So. It's over a decade.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, I'm right there with you. Yeah, I've been doing this, 12 years or so? So, all right. So at this point, are you hoping to get back around to directing? Like is tapping into screenwriting a step towards that, or are you like full in on screenwriting at this point?
You know, I've been full in on screenwriting. And like I said, also kind of working my day job on more of the marketing side for the film industry. Uh-huh. And I really actually think that producing would probably be the better fit for me. I know my writing partner is interested in directing probably more so than I am, but yeah, I think producing would be a good fit.
So you are, at this point in your story, you are out in LA, you're working a marketing day job in movies. So you're working in movies, but you're trying to do writing on the side. How did you end up back in Atlanta then?
A series of events. I spent a season away from LA, still continuing to write, and then moved back to Atlanta, partially to be closer to my writing partner. and just to be in a bigger market for film. I didn't really want to go back to LA at that point, and so it was just a good fit for me to come back here.
Gotcha. So LA at that point, was it being a writer out there? Because you hear the cliche all the time. You go into a Starbucks and everybody's got their laptops open. Everybody's working on a script. Did it feel like that to you, that it was a bit of a just too much competition, just too much? You felt like everybody else there?
Absolutely. I mean, it really is true. Everybody you meet has, you know, three side hustles, and everybody right. wants to do something in the industry, even though they're working at Starbucks. And it's very, very true. I don't know that I didn't leave because of the competition. I left for other reasons, but, yeah. But I do think that, you know, in other markets, it gives you a little more opportunity if there are local opportunities. But the challenge is that so much of the decision making in terms of buying scripts or hiring writers still comes out of LA and or, you know, sometimes New York. Right. So it is a challenge not being there. But, you know, I think I spent a good bit of time just hunkered down trying to learn the craft as much as I could and trying to kind of see, you know, how good my work is. Is it good enough? I think Alexis and I were very careful about going out too quickly with our work. We listened when people said, you know, you get one shot to impress someone. Yeah. Don't go out with something that's not ready.
So one thing I really wanted to talk about today is this moment that I feel like every writing journey comes to, which I refer to as the mental slog, which is this kind of inevitable force that pushes against any creative effort you put out, whether that's writing or whatever. But, you know, it might show up in the form of rejection or distractions or excuses or low self-esteem, life-work balance, sometimes even competing successes. So, you know, you want to be a writer, but you get a raise at work and it's going to require more hours. And it might be a good thing that's pulling you away from work, but it's something pulling you away. So what are some of the biggest hurdles that you and Alexis have faced along the way on this long writing journey for you guys?
I think the balancing with a day job or with other family responsibilities is a huge thing for anybody. Yeah. I mean, most screenwriters, at least for a good portion of their career, are balancing it on the side. And sure. I think, you know, a few years back, we decided to really give it a go very seriously and treat it as if we were professional writers and treat it with that kind of respect in the time that we gave it. But sometimes that gets really challenging when you're juggling other things and you're trying to pay your bills.
Right. Yeah, I know. So both you guys have day jobs, is that correct?
Yeah, we do.
And Alexis also has a slew of kids, right?
Yes, she has family and kids and all those other responsibilities that come with that too.
Yeah. Yeah. All these things to balance. And I'm the same way, you know, even though I'm doing all this and writing and making movies, I still work a day job. And I think it's just part of the gig right now. Especially when you're starting off or, you know, like you and I 10 plus years into it, that it just takes a long journey. And I feel like there's this story told maybe through news sites or things that people share on Facebook of this romantic kind of Cinderella story that a first-time writer hits it big and sells a script or wins an Oscar. And you think that that's how the path works, that there's but it kind of sets up this unattainable idea of success in our minds. When the truth is, it does take years, if not decades, to kind of master the craft and to navigate that world. So what were your expectations going into it? Did you have that Cinderella story in your mind that you would write one thing and make it?
Oh, sure. Who doesn't, you know, in their 20s? Right, yeah. I mean, I think back, you know, the industry's changed a whole lot in the last few years. And I think there were more of those Cinderella stories or million-plus-dollar deals that were in the trades all the time. At that point in time, right. It seemed super attainable, you know, to some degree. And I think, you know, you always, when you're starting out, you underestimate the amount of time it will take to really get good at the craft. And then also just the selling part of it, you know, there's a whole business side of the industry that comes into play once you've written something. So you also have to be able to sell it. And there's a lot of factors.
And oftentimes, yeah, oftentimes those are completely different skill sets too. That once you've mastered one, you still have that other side. And especially on the indie film side of things where you're wearing, you know, a dozen hats, not just one or two.
Yeah. And then both sides could easily be a full-time job in and of themselves. So it's,
right.
Often been hard to juggle the pitching of a project and the writing at the same time, because with pitching, there's so much research you have to do into who you're going to pitch and how you're going to pitch and writing the queries and all that stuff.
You mentioned kind of the biggest hurdle for you guys being the work-life thing. How does having a writing partner help with that? Or does it help in those scenarios?
I think it can really help and has for us, you know, when one of us gets super busy with something or, you know, hey, this week I'm on vacation, oftentimes the other person can keep moving to some degree, keep moving things forward and keep writing. So you don't, I think you maybe don't lose time as much as you might if you were writing by yourself.
So what's your, how do you guys write together? What's the kind of structure that you guys have? Do you divide scenes up? Do you write in the same room? How does it all work?
So we rarely write in the same room together. And a lot of that just comes out of probably habit from so many years of, you know, living in other states and writing. And so we often spend a ton of time on the phone when we're starting a project and we are outlining and brainstorming and creating the characters, and we outline in pretty good detail before we even start writing, and so we've really got start to finish a roadmap to get us there. Now we often revise that roadmap along the way, but we do start with the outline, and then we will break it up, and we often do go sequentially through the script. I know a lot of writers just jump to the scene that they're most excited about writing. It's a little bit harder, especially with act one and like creating your characters and being on the same page when you're a writing team. You really need to set that foundation really well before you move into the rest of the script. So we will break up scenes. Sometimes we go a couple scenes at a time. Sometimes we're going in like 15 page chunks. It just depends on what stage of the script we're in.
Yeah. So what are the, what's the best and worst part of having a writing partner?
I think there's a couple of really awesome things about having a writing partner. Number one, you have two heads to get you unstuck. That's two brains to work on the problem, which is great. And you have that accountability built in if you're both really respecting it. And then you also don't have to go into pitch meetings alone, which is great.
Mentioning accountability, I think is really interesting because so many people were kind of, are you guys able to kind of hold each other to a certain writing schedule? Like, is that kind of a thing where, you know, maybe you haven't written in a week and Alexis is like, hey, where are those pages? What are you doing? Is that kind of part of your process?
Yeah. I mean, we really don't have a lot of that happen because we will, when we break things up, we will set a deadline for when we have to turn those into each other to read and review. And I mean, we both, you know, we've been doing this together long enough and we both respect the work enough that we meet those deadlines. I mean, if we don't, it's, you know, by a day maybe, or we have some extenuating circumstances, but generally we're really good about hitting those.
Okay. So what do you recommend to a writer who might not have that accountability partner, that maybe they're in the middle of nowhere and they're the only writer they know? What can they do to kind of find that, maybe it's not a person, maybe it's a thing, but that person or thing or whatever to kind of keep them on task?
Yeah, I mean, I think if it's a person, it could be either another screenwriter from a community. They don't have to be where you live, an online community.
It wasn't for you for such a long time.
Right, exactly. It could be a family member, somebody that you give your writing schedule to, and a friend, you know, tell them to hold you to it. And you can assign, you know, celebrations and punishments accordingly if you need that kind of motivation. The other thing is just if you're on your own and you don't have anyone who can help keep you accountable is, you know, figuring out your why, which, you know, I think you talked about in your first episode is, you know, if you have something strong enough that's driving you and you have that kind of innate desire to finish a project, that will help you in the days when it's really hard. And that's the last thing you want to do is sit down at your computer to write.
I think a big struggle for a lot of writers is that rejection is so kind of intimately tied to them personally. So that, like, you know, when you face a difficult, maybe a bad review of your work that you entered a contest and didn't make it, or sent it out to someone who just didn't get it. That we put our hearts and souls into our work, and when that's rejected, we feel that rejection personally. So how do you keep a healthy self-esteem while facing all the kind of constant stream of rejection that comes your way?
So there are a couple things that I would say whenever facing rejection, especially in the film industry, in your writing, is just breaking down the reasons for the rejection, because there are a lot of different reasons why someone passed on your project or didn't like it. I mean, of course, it could be, hey, the writing is not where it needs to be. And then obviously you need to go back and do the personal work for that. But it could also be market trends. You know, if you were trying to sell a rom-com a few years ago, that market was dead. And so, you know, you just need to shelve that until the right timing comes around. There's also, you may be pitching the wrong person just bad timing. They have a similar project in the works. And so I think if you can assess that, that will help you depersonalize some of it if it hits those other verticals and it's not the writing. And then I think just personally, you know, making sure that your identity is not tied to your writing. It's really easy to do that. And it is very personal. And I think if you can just remember that you have worth and value as a person outside of your writing, so that no matter what happens with your career, you're still of value and you still have something to contribute. If you can keep that in mind, it will really help you to deal with the rejections that come.
Yeah, I think that's such an important mindset to have, because we take on these kind of dreams as our identity, and that's who we are. And if we don't get to a made up idea of that in our heads, that it really is an attack on us, that we feel like we didn't have something or weren't good enough. But I think the truth is a lot of it is just realizing that that's just what it takes. And that it takes so long because all of those struggles make you a better writer and better prepare you for the actual job, really, which I always like to say that the only person who gets rejected more than an amateur writer is a professional writer, right? Because even once you make it, you're pitching things that aren't getting picked up. You're writing stuff that never sees the light of day. It's just part of the job, and you kind of have to learn how to react to it in a way that you can keep going and sit down the next day and treat it like a job.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. And I think the longer I'm in this, the more I realize that, you know, this idea of suddenly making it one day is just false. I mean, yeah, you can take a huge stride forward and suddenly you can get meetings in town, but just getting meetings is not going to get you anywhere. And then you get your first assignment, but then you're on this hamster wheel where you have to keep that thing turning as a professional writer, or you get left in the dust and nobody's going to remember you. Yeah. You know, it's like they're moving on. So it's a lot to think about as you're jumping into it. But I think realizing that it's not going to end once you so-called make it will help you prepare now to be ready, you know, for those challenges you're going to face.
So for you guys personally, let's say you've just gotten that rejection notice, or someone read your script and gave it a big thumbs down, or some deal that you had fell through. What's the first thing you do? What's your initial reaction to that?
Oh, initial reaction is I'm totally bummed, probably. But the amount of time in which I sit in that has lessened over the years. With the more rejections you get, the easier it is to move on quickly. Also, I think one of the biggest things that I am trying to be better about and that we have done is, you know, not just look at that one rejection, but also look at where you are on your journey and like, hey, well, we got rejected at that level. Okay, maybe we got rejected. We didn't make the semifinals, but hey, we made the quarterfinals and hey, that's a step forward. Right. That was our first time doing that. Or hey, you know, the feedback was really great. So I think putting it in perspective of your overall journey, and as long as you know you're still moving forward and you're still making progress in your career and in your writing, then I think you can keep moving from there.
Yeah, I think it's celebrating those little wins is such a big thing. I actually, another thing I wanted to talk about was kind of surrounding yourself with things that encourage your mental state. So maybe that's community like we talked about before, or it could just be environment. Like I've printed out a resume of sorts of like all my accomplishments, like the things that I've done or won over the years, and pinned it up above my desk where I write, because it's such a great reminder that I'm not a complete loser, you know, like that you face those kind of rejections and you think, oh, that's who I am. But then you go back and you look and you're like, oh no, I've done this and this and this and this and this thing that I totally forgot about that I did 5 years ago. And then you just have all these, this proof of things that you've actually done. So what are there any things that you do like that? That's kind of, you create a positive environment around yourself.
So I have not done that, but I really want to do that now. That's like the reverse of what Stephen King did, right? Where he would post his rejection letters above his desk.
Oh, did he really? As a challenge?
Yeah. But yeah, no, I haven't done that, but I definitely have taken more time to celebrate. And I remember a few years back, we placed in a competition and some friends just so, you know, lovingly gathered around and threw a dinner for me just to celebrate with me. And that felt so good, awesome. You know, because you talk about things with your friends or family, you're like, yeah, I'm still writing. Yeah. You know, no, you can't see any of my movies yet, you know, and it feels really depressing. Right. And you like, you think, oh, these people must think I'm doing nothing with my life, you know, because they can't understand it. And they don't know the ins and outs of the industry. But so I think celebrating is really great. And, you know, definitely keeping yourself surrounded by other people who are going to speak positively and encourage you, whether they're in the industry or not, is helpful as well.
Yeah, 100%. I love that. So one of the last things I wanted to talk about is I think one of the biggest parts of productivity and facing this mental slog is just being prepared for it. So for someone who, you know, you and I have been at this for a while, but for someone who's just starting out and they're facing these things, and how, like you said, the more you face it, the less it kind of hurts, right? So any kind of fear that you're facing, you kind of learn to deal with it. But for someone that's just starting out, I think it's important to kind of just realize what's coming and try to face it head on. That the more you can prepare for it and call it out, the more prepared you are for when it happens. So what are some, and that's all kinds of things. So it's not just facing rejections, but I think in terms of making excuses too. So like you and I recognize now, having been at this for so long, that we know what our excuses are. We know what our go-to procrastinations are. We know what lights us up or what depresses us in terms of writing. So what are some of the excuses that you've recognized in yourself over the years to learn to deal with, so that you can call those out ahead of time? What are the things that you're always looking for? Like, oh no, if I do this, or if I don't do this, then I'm going to get stuck again.
Gosh, I think a big excuse that's really easy for writers to use is, just watching TV and movies, you know, like you can chalk it up to, oh, I'm doing research. Oh, I'm doing, you know, I'm still doing stuff in the industry. I need to watch this, you know, to know what's going on. But it can just become an escape and it just suck your time away before you realize it. And I think that's probably my number one go-to when I want to procrastinate.
And I think even screenwriting or filmmaking education type stuff can be that for you too. Going to festivals, taking classes online or whatever, because you're not actually doing the writing. And I do think that stuff is important in addition to writing, but when it takes the place of it or it pushes it back, I think it can become a negative thing as well.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, if you were in any other kind of industry, you know, it's like, okay, how much of your day are you spending on income producing activities versus all the other peripheral right. things? And I don't think sometimes we think about that with screenwriting or with art necessarily, but it's a really great way to think about it. You know, okay, my actual writing is creating a product that could potentially sell down the road. That is my income producing activity. And the other stuff is great, but it shouldn't take up the majority of your time.
Right. To really treat it like a job. So like if you showed up for work and you, you know, watch Netflix for 2 hours, that would probably be pretty frowned upon. And so you really to respect your writing time as if it's a job. I really like
yeah.
that.
And I think a lot of people use the, you know, the productivity tools that kind of shut the rest of the world out. I have not yet used one. I really need to, but I'm trying to be better about even during, you know, my day job, turning off my phone, turning off the distractions and the things that right. you could so easily go to. I mean, even research is like the notorious, you know, issue for writers because you pull up that internet browser and suddenly you're lost an hour later down some rabbit hole or on Facebook and, you know.
Right. Yeah. 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 No, I haven't done those either. You're talking about like that turns the internet off for an hour or whatever. So yeah. But I don't know. I find that when I'm writing, I can get into that flow if I just get mm-hmm. started, you know. It's more about just the sitting down and doing it.
But I've
heard a lot of people having success with that too. All right. So I wanted to wrap up with five quick questions. So first of all, what do you write?
I write mostly comedy.
Cool. And what's your proudest accomplishment?
I would say being able to maintain a close relationship with my family over the years.
Oh, that's awesome. How do you define success?
I think doing the best I can with my time and giftings that I've been given. So not trying to compare myself with others.
What writers do you most look up to and why?
I really like Karen McCullough and Kristen Smith, an awesome writing partnership, and Katie Dippold as well. I just think they're consistently funny and they write women of all different types.
What advice would you give to your younger self?
Don't be afraid to step out and be yourself.
Love it. So thank you so much for being on this and having this conversation. So where can listeners find you on and around the internet? If they so please.
Yeah, I think probably the easiest way to find me is just through the Script Blast group. I am in there, so look me up.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much, Jessica. I really appreciate this, and we'll have to stay in touch and fill everybody in as your career progresses.
Sounds good. Thanks, Hudson.
All right. Thanks a bunch.
Thanks again to Jessica for being on the show. As always, I will leave you with an assignment for the week. This time, we're going to get real honest with ourselves and call out our excuses. Take out a sheet of paper, or I guess your phone, and write out all the things that keep you from writing. Could be fear, could be low self-esteem, maybe that comes from following a more successful screenwriter on Instagram or difficult conversations with family members. Could be getting home from work and immediately jumping into your latest binge-worthy show. Could be the depression that comes from rejection. Whatever it is, write it down, own it. The more you prepare for what's coming your way, the more you'll be able to face it when it finally does. You must first know your weaknesses in order to overcome them. If you want to be a part of the Script Blast community and connect with other inspiring screenwriters like Jessica to help lift you up in dark times, come find the bread and butter of Script Blast, our private Facebook group. Everyone is welcome to join completely free. You can find us at facebook.com/groups/scriptblast. Or subscribe to get more free resources at scriptblast.com. This marks the end of Season 1 and our discussion of productivity. I'd love to hear what you guys think, so please leave us a review or email me at hudson@scriptblast.com. We'll be back in a few weeks to deep dive into idea generation, outlining, story structure, and writing prep, all the things you do before you write your first draft. In the meantime, keep writing.